Radio Prague News.
The French-Dutch airliner Air France KLM is reportedly weighing a bid for CSA, the Czech national carrier. A firm responsible for the organization of mass transit in Prague has said that the city bus drivers stole tens of millions of crowns from the company last year. The Czech Veterinarian Authority has denied accusations that Czech breeders exported rats infected with cowpox to Germany and France. The French-Dutch airliner Air France KLM is reportedly weighing a bid for CSA, the Czech national carrier, up for sale by the Czech government. According to the French daily La Tribune, the airline could offer as much as 200 million euros for the 91.5% stake, the equivalent of 5.6 billion crowns, or around 255 million US dollars. A spokesman for Air France KLM on Wednesday said the company was looking carefully into the sale, but did not confirm the amount of the potential bid. The Czech government is hoping to announce a buyer by September 30th. Other firms interested in CSA include Aeroflot and reportedly also Lufthansa. A firm responsible for the organization of mass transit in Prague has said that city bus drivers stole tens of millions of crowns from the company last year, Lidové Noviny has reported. Some 10% of the city's drivers are thought to be guilty of having accepted transit fees without issuing actual tickets. The number of passengers who were stolen from has been estimated at 2.8 million. The Czech Veterinarian Authority has denied accusations that Czech breeders exported dozens of common rats infected with cowpox to France and Germany. In January, 20 rats with the infection were detected in German pet shops. Later, 9 more cases were discovered in France. Local authorities say all the animals came from a Czech wholesale company. The Czech veterinarian body said on Tuesday they had inspected several facilities from which the rats had allegedly come and found no animals infected with the disease. Hundreds of geese at a farm in the Hodonín area in the southeast of the country will be destroyed on Wednesday to contain the risk of H7 bird flu from spreading. A kilometer-wide safety perimeter will also be set up around the area by vets. A local official said that the method used to put the birds down would be the most humane, using carbon dioxide. Other specimens, meanwhile, are still being tested for signs of the disease. The H7 bird flu is considered far less dangerous than the H5N1 strain, which can be deadly to humans. DVD sales in the Czech Republic have reached their highest level since the market release of the format in 1997. Shops and video rental stores recorded a record 3.3 million digital video discs sold in 2008, which marks a 13% rise compared to the year 2007. While there was a tremendous increase in the number of DVDs bought in shops, the video rental industry has declined drastically, purchasing 48% less films than the year before. And now a quick look at the weather. Conditions on Thursday are expected to be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain, as well as snow in places. Daytime temperatures are expected to reach around 4 degrees Celsius. I'm Christian Falvey, and that is the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, the central bank says misleading information about the Czech economy, which has appeared in the foreign media, is hurting the country. We take a closer look at what's at the center of dispute. We remember the last vain attempt by university students to prevent the communist seizure of power in 1948, and hear about a new Czech record epitomizing modern decadence.
It sounds like a mixture of Throbbing Crystal, Portishead and Current 93.
Later on in the show, in Spotlight, Jan Wellinger will take you to Prague's main exhibition grounds, Výstaviště. All that coming your way, so please do stay with us. Several respected newspapers and magazines, such as The Economist and The Financial Times, have in recent weeks reported on the severe economic problems facing Eastern Europe, without properly distinguishing between the region's individual states. The Czech National Bank on Tuesday voiced strong objections to what it described as misleading and inaccurate coverage of the Czech Republic's economy by the foreign media, coverage they say is harming the country. Jan Richter reports.
Tak nám by úplně stačilo, kdyby nás neřadili do stejného balíku. Já jsem o tom mluvil, právě protože nás zařadí do stejného balíku.
Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek jokingly told reporters on Friday that the Czech Republic might end up needing EU bailout if analysts and journalists keep lumping it together with other Eastern European countries, regardless of the actual differences in their economies. The Czech National Bank has taken the matter more seriously. In an unprecedented move, the central bank voiced on Tuesday objections to misleading and inaccurate information on the country's economic condition recently published by some foreign media outlets. Mojmír Hampl is the vice governor of the Czech National Bank.
We've been a bit frustrated by the fact that even prestigious journals and newspapers like Financial Times and The Economist were publishing incorrect and misleading information about the Czech banking sector.
The British paper Financial Times reported last week that the Czech foreign debt amounted to $192 billion, basing the figure on loans allegedly provided to Czech banks by their foreign owners. Another story, which appeared in the prestigious UK weekly The Economist on Saturday, labelled the Czech Republic as one of the countries whose households were in agony over mortgages in euros and Swiss francs. Mojmír Hampl says that while the latter story is a generalization of one or two countries' specific problems for the whole region, the report on the Czech foreign debt was based on wrong interpretation of the situation in the country's banking sector.
We have tried to explain that what has been described as foreign banks lending to the Czech financial sector is just a balance sheet of the Czech financial sector, basically in Czech crowns and lending of Czech banks to Czech households and Czech companies. So we wanted to stress that this information were completely misleading and might have misled also investors.
But not all of foreign press sees Eastern Europe, from the Czech Republic to Ukraine, as a monolithic bloc which shares the same problems. The New York Times ran a story on Tuesday entitled "A Crisis is Separating Eastern Europe Strong from its Weak." Its author and the paper's Prague correspondent Dan Bilevsky says journalists tend to behave the same way as the financial markets they report on.
I think at the moment what is happening is that foreign media as well as financial markets are not distinguishing between relatively resilient economies like the Czech Republic and economies that are in serious trouble such as Ukraine. So I think the Czech National Bank has a point that the media has to do a perhaps more nuanced job of distinguishing between how sick economies are. But at the same time, the Czech economy is being undermined by the global financial crisis, and the media has a responsibility to report that.
Making sure the Czech economy is not also undermined by inaccurate coverage, the central bank says that both publications acknowledge their mistake and are going to print the bank's reservations. Mojmír Hampl says the bank does not attach too much importance to the whole issue, but then again, these are the times of a crisis.
I do not want to say that based on this article, everybody sat at the screen and started selling. I don't believe it's that straightforward, but it was just one information in the current context that might have influenced at least some who do not read the analysis and papers critically, and that's why we felt it was necessary to react.
Mojmír Hampl, Vice Governor of the Czech National Bank, ending that report by Jan Richter. Now, in a year which will commemorate students' role in the Velvet Revolution that brought down the communist regime 20 years ago, a solemn ceremony today marked the last attempt by students to prevent the communist seizure of power back in 1948.
On February the 25th of 1948, around 6,000 university students marched on Prague Castle to try and convince President Edvard Beneš not to give in to communist demands for complete power. The march was brutally suppressed, and under immense pressure, Beneš made his fateful decision, which launched the more than 40-year-long dictatorship. One of the main participants in today's commemoration, the head of the Prague Club of Expelled 1948 Students, Zdeněk Bohač, explained the march's aims and its significance.
Pochod vysokoškolských studentů, kteří
The March of University Students took place on February 25, 1948, soon after Clement Gottwald announced the communist seizure of power. The march to the castle was aimed at stopping a communist putsch and was a declaration in support of freedom and democracy. Here in Nerudová Street at the junction with Janský Vršek, the march was blocked.
One of the then student leaders, Jiří Navratil, describes how the communist-controlled police fired machine guns to break up the march. Once in power, the communists quickly settled scores with the students.
Here, the first time, the police actually used their weapons, their samopals, but it was only beginning. Of 25% of all students of all universities were excluded from this. That means approximately 10,000 students. And in the time at Czech universities were studying 40,000 students. And these students were forced to go to principally in the mines.
Navratil, now 85, spent 11 years in prison camps after being sentenced for anti-state activities. He and the small handful of surviving student protesters from the era feel it is important to remember what they tried to do.
Chris Johnson there reporting on the beginning of one of the darkest chapters of the country's history. Now on to something entirely different and totally decadent. How do you imagine the soundtrack to an exhibition called Decadence would sound? Czech musicians Monika Nacheva and David Seidhammer were asked to create just that, a piece of modern music to accompany an exhibit dedicated to the excesses of the fin de siècle. So what did they do? They produced a 12-minute reworking of Serge Gainsbourg's La Décadence. The vinyl was launched in Prague on Tuesday, and Rosie Johnson was there.
Dance. La Décadence. Oui, c'est bien.
The exhibition Decadence in the Bohemian Lands, 1880 to 1915, was such a hit when it opened here in Prague that the show was given a second outing in Brussels, where it's currently running as part of the Czech EU presidency. To accompany the show, which presents images of sex, death and horror by artists such as František Kupka and Alfred Kubin, a reworking of Serge Gainsbourg's La Décadence has been released on limited edition vinyl. The cover version was the idea of the exhibition's curator, Otto Urban.
I was always interested not only to researching the past, but see the past from the present view. So for me, it was very important to see that late 19th, early 20th century through the eyes of the present. And I found out that it would be ideal if some contemporary artists would deal with the topic of decadence from contemporary perspective and will accompany the show which presents the stuff 100 years old nowadays, and to show actually that even the stuff is was done 100 years ago, it's somehow present, and the themes and topics are still alive.
What would you say that modern decadence sounds like?
It sounds like a mixture of Throbbing Crystal, Portishead, and Current 93, but especially its sound of Nacheva and Seidhammer.
Des troubles sous de troubles mon sens la décadence.
Artist and musician David Seidhammer plays guitar in this version of the Gainsbourg Birkin classic.
We liked very much the atmosphere of Gainsbourg and the important things what are important for him, I think they are also important for us. So this was something, some good relationship.
So what are the things that are important to Gainsbourg and that are important to you?
It's simple. It's sex and drugs and rock and roll.
And final question, are you happy with the outcome? Is it decadent enough?
I am very happy.
There are 300 copies of this vinyl on sale. They can be found in Brussels Town Hall, where the Decadence in the Bohemian Lands exhibition is running until May the 10th. You can also download the song for free from the exhibition's website, which is www.decadenza.info. Rosie Johnson with that report. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time to go places. In this edition of Spotlight, Jan Wellinger will take you to Výstaviště, Prague's main exhibition grounds.
In today's Spotlight, we look at the history of Výstaviště, Prague's exhibition grounds, founded in the late 19th century but used to this day for fairs, exhibitions, concerts and other activities. Every year, Výstaviště, which is found at the edge of Bubeneč's Stromovka Park and the Prague district of Holešovice, continually draws tens of thousands of visitors, both from the Czech Republic and from abroad. The centerpiece is the 19th century Industrial Palace, an architectural gem that was partly destroyed by fire last year. What is the palace's history? The building, whose left wing will need to be completely rebuilt, was first completed in 1891, part of the newly founded exhibition grounds in time for Prague's Jubilee exhibition, celebrating Czech industry and technological innovation. Architectural historian Zdeněk Lukáš.
It was inspired by a World Expo in Paris in 1889. The most important structures of that expo was Eiffel Tower and Machine Hall. And it was a great inspiration for our architects and engineers. And they also built something like a small copy of Eiffel, but not there, but in Petřín, and also Machine Hall and Industrial Palace. It was an iron construction, one of the first in Prague. And it was in the middle part of exhibition area, and many other pavilions, about 100 pavilions, were built in that years, it means 1890, 1891. And most of them were destroyed in later periods, of course, but the Industrial Palace survived.
The palace was designed by architect Bedřich Mintzberger, but it is not an example of Art Nouveau, as commonly believed. Zdeněk Lukáš again.
Of course, in the beginning of Art Nouveau style, there were these iron structures. The first Art Nouveau architect, Victor Orta from Brussels, Belgium, created his first famous houses with these steel constructions. It was possible to create some floral or vegetable motifs from iron and so. And that's why that the beginning of Art Nouveau period is connected with iron constructions. But the Palace of Fair in Prague was built in between 1890-91. It means 2 years before the first Art Nouveau structure by Victor Orta in Brussels. That's why that we could say that the material is same, but if you see the building, this is an example of late historicism.
Mintzberger made use of skeletal steel structures and glass to create a building that was symmetrical, with two wings, two towers, which were richly decorated with niches featuring emperors of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. The central tower was also iron, featuring a clock, and that was topped by a royal crown. It is this tower, 51 meters above the ground, which is the building's most dominant feature. During the 1891 Jubilee exhibition, the building drew wide praise and was compared to other great 19th century buildings such as the Rudolfinum Concert Hall and the National Theatre. Examples of heavy industry from factory machinery to locomotives could be viewed inside. And not just that. A few years after opening, the site also featured a building which inspired a later show on folk architecture.
Česká chalupa was something like a free copy of typical folk house, Bohemian house, which was designed by architect and professor of Czech Technical University Jan Koula. And this small house was very popular during the exhibition and maybe was an inspiration for the next big show in this area, so-called Národopisná výstava, it means folk exhibition of Slavic lands. And it was done in 1895, and it was chance to show to the people typical Slavic houses, including architecture of medieval and baroque period. And these buildings were built like a copies, or the original buildings of that areas were transferred to Prague and then built again.
Shows at the palace and the rest of the exhibition grounds proved immensely popular, with the next significant date being 1908.
The exhibition area was a possibility for generations of architects to show something new, something special, because all these structures were structures for one function only, the exhibition, and without possibility to survive. Paradoxically, some survived till today, but it's exceptions. The next big show was held in 1908, and it was possibility for next generation of architects around Jan Kotěra, leading person of that era, to show some modern style pavilions. But then the era stayed neglected, and the new center of modern architecture and design was created in Brno in 1928, and that's why that nothing new was added.
Under communism after 1948, the role of the palace and surroundings declined further, although the site was used for political meetings. But socialist-realist elements were soon added, negatively impacting the space. Architectural historian Zdeněk Lukeš is in favor of those being removed, saying the building should be restored to its original state. In his view, there's no better opportunity than now, when the palace's left wing, destroyed by last year's blaze, will be rebuilt, estimated at a cost of around 1 billion crowns. Zdeněk Lukeš again.
My recommendation is to destroy all these additions from 50s and to recreate again the palace with all decorations, including destroyed crown on the top and figures of emperors, during process of restoration of the pavilion and reconstruction of the wing.
And while the wing was completely consumed by fire, reconstruction in this case shouldn't be difficult for a number of reasons.
I think it's no problem to make exact copy of the original, because we have next wing, the opposite wing, which is similar, of course. The whole building is totally similar. And we have all documentations for this building and all plans or copies of original plans and many photos. That's why that I hope for a good future of the building, and I'm sure that this wing will be erected again.
The remaining parts of the building, meanwhile, remain in operation, the site of dozens of exhibitions each year. Radovan Ježovic is the marketing director for Incheba, the firm which has held the lease for the exhibition grounds since 2000.
We made here approximately 50 exhibitions per year. Every year, you know, some are closing, some new are coming. So from other exhibitions which are made by us, our company, it's the most famous, you know, motorcycle, because here are 65,000 people per 4 days visiting this show. Also the Holiday World, which is international tourism fair. also it's very, very popular. And from the other exhibitions which are made by other companies, we just only rented the space for them. It's most famous also the book fair and also the advertising fair Reklaman Poriglav.
The city is now pressing the firm to take responsibility for the reconstruction of the palace, but the company has not yet done so, sparking speculation the city could terminate the lease. The marketing director, meanwhile, says the matter is still in negotiation. Despite the complications, the palace remains a worthy destination for visitors, especially when combined with walks through Stromovka or visits to the nearby National Gallery.
And that edition of Spotlight with Jan Vellinger brings us to the end of today's show. Radio.cz is where you will find us online. Should you like to write to us about anything you heard in the show, offer comments and suggestions, or simply get in touch with us, then the email address is english@radio.cz. Or send your letters to Vinohradská 12, Prague, postal code 12099. We'll be very glad to hear from you. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.